What up, guys? Welcome to the New American Dream Podcast. I'm your host, George Gibson. Alrighty, that was a long one right there. But listen, today we have an awesome, awesome show. This guest, he kind of reminded me of exactly why I got into real estate. And for everybody out there that's not really a great math person, math was one of my favorite classes in high school, and it came natural to me. So when it comes to real estate, it's not really an emotional game. I see it as all about the numbers. So let me try to break it down real quick before we get to the episode. The reason I really wanted to get into real estate is because it made so much sense. You buy a house, right? You buy the property. You got a mortgage on it at, say, 3% interest. So every month you have to pay the bank $500, right? I'm just making up this, but you pay the bank $500 every month, right? This is a normal deal. And every month, the tenant pays you $1,000, right? So you bought the property for $100,000. You got a mortgage. Your mortgage is $500 a month. They pay you $1,000 a month. So you get an extra $500 a month cash flow, right? So that's one benefit. The second benefit is every time you pay that mortgage, you owe less and less every year. So your mortgage, the amount you owe the bank, it gets smaller and smaller the longer you hold it. And the longer you hold it, the more the property is worth. Typically, the value go up, just normal. So just think about it. How much this house is worth is going up. How much you owe on it is going down. This gap in the middle, that's your equity. That's how much money you have if you sell it, how much money you make. So like this guy today, he's a buy and hold guy, and exactly what I am. I was like, I'm buying properties, I'm not selling, and I'm gonna just rent them out. And that's like the long-term goal for anybody. It's generational wealth is created by buy and hold. And nowadays you got all these TV shows, people flipping houses and things. That is short-term income. It's not gonna last forever. You might make $40,000, $30,000 here, but that $40,000, $30,000 lasts for a period of time, not for the rest of your life. Buy and hold, you're setting up generational wealth. So that's why it's so important to buy not only yourself a primary home, but when you can, leverage your jobs. If you work on a job, he's going to talk about how important it is to have a job to leverage that in order to get these loans so easy. It just makes sense. And it's not difficult. This guy is a great, awesome guy. But enough of me talking. I want you to sit back, relax, and listen to what he say. He's going to teach a lot of information today. All right, welcome to the show. We have my guy, Jimmy Gatlin. Peace. All righty, welcome to the show. We have Jimmy Gatlin.
Hey, George. Hey, thanks for having me on today.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm ready to hear your story. I mean, let the people know about who you are and a little bit about what you do.
Yeah, my name's Jimmy Gatlin. I live in Michigan. I do a little bit of rehab work by myself, and I'm a buy and hold guy. You know, I'm in it for the long term. I always wanted to get into real estate since high school, but just never had the money for it. So
now you got the money, you're investing it all in real estate.
Yeah, a little bit. So, went to college right away, got an engineering degree. I know there's like this popular trend of don't go to college, you know, just start being an entrepreneur right away. I'm going to actually go against the crowd and say, I would recommend going to college.
Wow.
Because it makes investing so much easier, at least because I'm a buy and hold guy.
Right.
You know, I'm not wholesaling. I'm not listing houses. I'm in it for the long term. So if you have a good job, it makes the journey so much easier, right? Because getting the loans is simple. You walk into the bank, they want to hand you the money.
No, you're right. And that's the part, that's why I'm glad I got you on, because some people don't say that part. Like everybody like quit your job and just go invest in real estate. Like you're not gonna invest in real estate unless you got like Uncle Sam with a large bag of money. You're gonna be out here struggling.
Yeah, and you can do it that way, but it's going to, I mean, this business is hard. You know, you know that.
Right.
It's not easy. So can you buy real estate and invest with no money? Sure, you can, but it's going to make it that much more difficult and it might leave a bad taste in your mouth.
Right.
You know, or what if you start investing and you find out you don't like it? You know, it's not for everybody. You know, I'm passionate about it. I love it.
Right.
So, but it's not for everybody. You know, you got to be hard headed. There's a lot of obstacles you're going to face and challenges. It's like being an entrepreneur in anything. You know, it's a roller coaster ride. You're gonna have your high highs and your low lows.
Yeah, I always say I look at other real estate investors and I'll be like, yeah, you're a dummy too. And I'm like, what you mean you're a dummy? Well, I don't really go to too many of these meetups, conferences and stuff. But the one I did go to, nobody there had bought any houses. They were all there thinking of trying to buy houses. So I realized when I got there, oh yeah, I'm the dummy because I'm just buying houses but not taking no course, you know? So yep. it's just like you said, you got to get the experience to actually know if you really like it or not.
Exactly. And yeah. You got to take it one step at a time.
Right.
You know?
All right. No, all right. So that's all right. We got off on a little tangent. Let's start from the beginning. Where were you raised at?
I grew up in Clinton Township, Michigan.
Okay, Michigan. And yep. In Michigan, being raised up, what would you consider growing up? Were you like poor, middle class, rich? How was your family lifestyle?
Middle class. You know, my parents aren't wealthy, but we always had food on the table.
Okay.
You know, but my parents worked really hard.
What did your parents' occupations?
My dad does sales for a tooling company, and then my mom had a cleaning business.
Okay.
So, and my dad was working two jobs at one point, just hustling all the time. And maybe that kind of sparked something in me like, hey, I don't want to do that. You know, I want to be smart about it and play my cards right now when I'm younger. So that way I don't have to do that in the future.
Right.
You know, I'll have more options and more freedom to do what I want. So maybe that kind of sparked something in me. But yeah, I want to have more options and I want to have a better future.
Did your parents ever talk to you like about money at the dinner table? Or was it like, okay, we go to work, son, we pay the bills and you just get by? Or did they talk to you?
No, they didn't teach me anything about money.
Wow.
So, I mean, they taught me to save money.
Right.
That was it. Save it, put it in a bank account, you know, retirement fund, whatever. That was it. They didn't teach me anything about investing, entrepreneurship. I mean, that's the power of the internet today. We're growing up in a great time. We could tap in a podcast. I mean, it's so convenient right now. Anybody can learn. You know, it's so easy to learn. If you're really determined, you can learn anything.
Right. And right now, extremely popular. I don't know about your friends, but like my friends, the phone are going off with the stock market. I haven't got in it yet, but it's like people are just like making $2,000 a day. They like own this stock and it's all because of the internet. Everybody like learning how to do it.
Right. Right. It's tempting to jump into that, but that's just not the type of investing that I do.
Right.
You know, if I had a big stockpile of cash, I would definitely get into that. But I don't know, man. I think real estate is very safe. As crazy as that might sound, because right. I'm in it for the long term. Okay. So if the market crashes, I'm not selling.
Right.
You know, and I have enough positive cash flow in all my properties to where I'm not worried about it. In fact, the more properties I buy, the less risk I feel like I'm taking because I have more streams of income coming in. You know, if I only had my day job and that gets cut and I got a mortgage to pay, I'm done. You know, right. I'm losing the house. If the economy crashes and I lose my job and I have one stream of income, I'm done.
Yeah. So see, I can tell, all right, you're an engineer student. So what was your GPA in high school? Let's try to get some background.
You know, around average, not really that good. I really buckled down in college.
Okay.
I'll be honest with you. I didn't study that hard in high school just because, well, one, I was working. I've had a job since I was 14 years old. So I was working almost 40 hours during high school.
Wow.
So it was really hard to have time to really focus on school. And then I kind of, before I went to college towards my senior year, I kind of just did some research and tried to figure out what the best degree would be. And not to be biased, but I think engineering is the best degree you can get, you know, and I love my job. I like my day job. The investing is just something to complement what I'm already doing.
Right.
And to give me some options for the future.
Gotcha.
So okay. I can take all my cash flow from my rentals and continue to reinvest it. I think that's kind of the power of having the day job.
Now, yeah, and you understand that because people always saying it's a crash coming. But like you kind of think we got this left brain over here. And like me, I'm like, okay, say my property do drop in value. I don't think the rent going to drop in half, because if it do, that means I might go rent somewhere, you know?
Exactly.
You understand the value of the property might change over the 30 years we're living investing, but I think that rent going to steady increase no matter what. And that's
exactly
long term.
Or it might even go the other way, right? With inflation, everything goes up. And that's kind of the icing on the cake. I don't bank on that. But if I'm locked in at a 30-year mortgage, my debt payment is the same for 30 years, but my rent goes up every year. So that spread continues to grow as time goes on. So it's almost like the longer you hold on to it, the better it is in many aspects. That doesn't even include the loan getting paid down.
No, definitely. And that's why, I mean, you, like you said, you like your job. So you can actually buy a home and be great. You know what I mean? Yeah. But in my case, you know, some people are like, I didn't like my job. I was a mailman. So it was a different approach. I took it as I'm going to buy a home, but I also got to do a couple flips in there, you know, because the rent, it comes every month. But the flips is what allows you to go buy another property, you know, faster.
Yeah. And it's hard. It's hard to see the benefit right away. It takes a long time, I feel like. I think everybody, there's a breaking point where you have enough rental cash flow coming in to where you can like really ramp it up.
Right.
You know, but in the beginning, it's so difficult. You know, you have two or three properties, you're not making a lot of money.
I tell my handyman, he's making more money than me. And he's like, no way. Because I bought the property, I rehabbed the property. Now I'm finally making the hundreds of bucks. You know what I mean? But look at the money I put in. And so I always joke with people working. I'm like, trust me, hey, this property, you made more money off of it than me.
That's right. Yep. It's hard to see the light. But if you have that long-term vision, it'll really pay off.
Okay. So you said you was working at the age of 14. I want to ask, like, is it any job that you think – I know people think, like, at that age, the job doesn't matter. But is it any job at that age that you think helped you as far as like now your adulthood and investing?
Well, I was working in a restaurant.
Okay.
So 14-hour days on Saturday, 10-hour days on Sunday, and then a few days during the week. Right. So I think that kind of carved out my work ethic for the future.
Yeah, working them long hours made me not want to work long hours, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It all goes back to that. Maybe, you know, maybe that influenced why I'm doing what I'm doing today.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that makes sense. So how many hours are you working in your job now?
Typically 40, but, you know, once in a while, it'll get busier, around 50 or so.
Okay.
For the most part, I enjoy it. You know, I have a fun job. And you know that I do most of all the work on my rehabs. So I kind of have a good mix, right? Because during the day, I'm sitting at a desk all day. I'm doing mental work.
Right.
So by the time 5 o'clock rolls around, I'm ready to get my hands dirty, man. You know, because I'm not doing physical labor all day. So it's a perfect balance because, you know, if I do a lot of physical labor at night or on the weekends, I'm sitting down at work all day. So I'm resting and restoring.
Right.
So if I was doing like a construction job all day, I don't know if I could do what I'm doing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
No, I get it. Because definitely I played sports in high school. So the fact that, you know, I'm not playing in NBA no more. I'm not playing in NBA or nothing. So you're not getting that physical activity like you used to. So being outside, you know, doing that work, it's kind of like still doing active and getting physical, you know?
Right.
All right. So you got runner. You a buy and hold guy. You buying rentals. You're not selling.
Right.
What's the ideal numbers for a good rental property in your area? Like, what's the numbers? If you were looking for the perfect deal, like, what's the type of numbers you're looking for as far as purchase price, you know, the rent and cash? Let's go.
Yep. So purchase price, I'm trying to buy the $120,000 house in the $200,000 neighborhood. Okay. Well, my first criteria is 1% rule. Okay. Can I buy a house that will rent? 1 month's rent will be whatever 1% of the purchase price. So for example, buy a house.
No, purchase price.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, purchase price with the rehab in it or just purchase price?
Just purchase price.
Okay, go ahead.
Yep. So, you know, I want to buy the worst house in the best neighborhood. I find in my market, anything between $120,000 and $200,000 is kind of the sweet spot for that. Once you start getting above $200,000, houses aren't really renting for over $2,000 a month.
Correct.
So I'm typically looking at about $120,000 purchase price and then roughly $20,000 for the rehab.
Okay.
Doing most of the work myself.
How much? 20?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you buy for 120, now you 20,000 in, so you're 140 and then so that house will rent out for maybe 1,200 bucks.
Yeah. Probably closer to 14 actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That meet the 1% rule. I got it.
And the 1% rule, it's just a quick scan, right? When I'm looking at deals, I'm just like, does it meet it or not? And then, okay, if it does, then I keep moving forward.
Right. No,
it's not an end all be all.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying. Because you did it. You've been doing it now. So that's like the first. If it don't meet that criteria, you don't even want to go see it.
Exactly. Yeah. And a tip too, maybe for some of the listeners, what I've been doing now is I felt kind of bad for I have a really good agent. And we were looking at every house, right? And I'm trying to, you know, go in a little bit lower than the asking price.
Right.
So now what I'll do is I'll even offer just by looking online, you know, because it's not wasting my time. It's not wasting my agent's time. And we found that's been really helpful because 95% of the time they're going to say no.
Wow. You said 95%.
Yeah. Oh, it's really hot here right now.
No, it's really hot. That's everywhere. And
yeah, for sure.
The only thing about that, because I'm in Florida. Florida's a hot market too right now. So I'm a realtor too. So if say you have your agent submit an offer on my property, you want to buy, right? You're interested. Jimmy wants to put a $100,000 offer on my $120,000 house, right?
Yep.
If Jimmy ain't come look at that house, I'm reluctant to take your offer a little serious. Only because you haven't even come look at it. So it's like a thin line between, you know, I'm not going to accept because you're probably just trying to tie my deal up for no reason just to come look at it, you know?
Well, it also depends on how many people are interested in the property.
Right.
You know, if they got 20 other people, why are they going to even look at my offer?
Yeah.
You know, so I'm looking for really distressed stuff where they're not getting any offers.
Okay. So are you able to get loans on a property in your area when the property is in this bad of a shape?
Yeah, as long as it's livable.
Okay.
Which, livable. You know, running water, electricity.
A roof, I mean, your walls, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Okay. No, that's a sweet spot. And it don't sound like you're doing those $60,000 rehab. You're going in there doing floors, painting, maybe windows, stuff like that.
Everything. Okay. Kitchen, bathroom, tile, you name it.
Wow. And how do you know how to do all these things?
I have, before I got into real estate, I have a little bit of construction background, but I'm a ready, fire, aim type of guy. Okay. So I tend to just throw myself, and maybe this works, maybe it doesn't. It's worked for me so far. But I tend to just throw myself into these situations and figure it out as I go. Like my first property, I was living in it, and, you know, I had one bathroom. We don't have to go into details about how I got by with that. But yeah. I tore the entire bathtub apart, took out all the old tile, took out the drywall, took out the plumbing, and said, all right, I got to figure this out. And I did it. You know, I never tiled a shower before. And wow. I just tried it, and it worked. So now I know how to do it. And then once I know how to do that, you can try something else. So my advice for people, if you want to do your own rehabs, just start out with something small. You know, change the light fixture in your kitchen.
Right.
Then you can change out an outlet. Then you can put recessed lighting in your house. Just build up the confidence to do one. Start small, and then you build up the confidence, and eventually you realize this stuff's not that hard.
Nah, you know? Yeah. I definitely, because nowadays I'll be, you know, I'll be watching my people work, and I realize, you know, electrician, plumbers, they charge a lot of money an hour, and it's not even that the job is that hard. It's just, you know, is this the ground wire, put this wire right here, outlet. You know, yep. Just most people think it's a lot of wire. It's only two wires, boom, boom.
Yep. So I think people are just intimidated by it. And the second you tell yourself it's hard or you're scared to do it, you're blocking out the opportunity to learn. So right. If you're a little bit open-minded and you realize it's not that difficult. Another thing too is when you're doing work, it doesn't have to be perfect.
Right.
Just try your best, you know, especially your first time doing it, try your best. You know, it doesn't have to be even, I mean, most of the work that contractors do is not that great. So you might even do better than that.
Right.
And at the end of the day, nobody's going to notice but you. And your house is still going to rent. It's still going to sell. Whatever you want to do with it, just try your best.
Right.
Don't worry about being perfect and doing everything like, you know HGTV style.
No, I have a lot of contractors though, they want things to be perfect. But like I said, I'm on the left side of the brain. So they're on the right side. They'll come in and look at the work I'm doing. And I mean, it'll drive them crazy. Like I have one guy, he won't even touch the work. You know, if somebody come in and mess it up, because that's his, like, it's crap. I guess they take it, you know, more sensitive.
Yeah.
But like you said, at the end of the day, I try to tell my guys, like, the person living here not going to be, they're not looking for all that. They want a safe, nice living place. And, you know, we don't have to be extremely perfect. It's not like $1 million house. $1 million house, okay, let's be perfect. But most of my properties are under $100,000. So you're in a C-class, you know, range.
Yeah, chances are you'll do an even better job than, you know, most of the houses in the area.
Right. So I have a lot of guests, and that's the – like, say you decided you wanted to ramp this thing up and start buying more houses. Then you would start hiring people to help you. What's your number one advantage in doing the rehab? Is you saving money, not paying anybody, you would say?
No, actually, so long-term, that is my plan, okay? Either one of two things is going to happen. I'm either going to have to quit my job and do real estate full-time, doing the work myself, or maybe being kind of like a GC managing projects and stuff, or I'm going to keep my job and hire most or almost all the work out, which is most likely going to happen because, like I said, I enjoy my day job.
No, you know? I suggest doing that on your next house, man, because like, I don't know, like, you know how to do all the work. Cause like this was I got old guys and they tell me, they say, George, if you know how to do the work, nobody can scam you or tell you, I'm going to put down this floor for $4,000, because you know what it takes to put a floor down. So you're in the perfect advantage to talk to the contractor, because he can't say, I'm going to put ceiling fans up for $300. You know what it takes to put a ceiling fan up. You know?
That was going to be my answer when you asked what my advantage is. It's not that I know how to do the work so I can do it for myself. It's when a contractor tells me it's going to cost $500 to change a toilet, I'm going to tell them to walk because I know how much it costs to put in a toilet. I know how long it takes. So that way I have a good idea of what just about everything would cost and what's realistic and what's not.
Right.
So I can't get taken advantage of compared to, you know, if you have no construction background, how would you know the difference? You got to learn the hard way.
Nah, yeah, that's how I was. I was up here Googling how much does it cost to put tile down? And on the internet, it'll probably say like $6 or $7 a square feet or something like that. But it's like, you don't have no idea. And especially the internet is not your market. So like the internet prices, you know, it's a lot, but like
it varies all over the place.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. What's the most important part of your rehab you think to make it a good tenant proof property?
Probably floors.
Floors. And what do you go with? Tile or hardwood?
I do laminate.
Laminate.
Yeah. Okay. High quality laminate. I've been hearing a lot of good stuff about LVP. And I use that in my bathroom. And it's great.
Wait, the LVP is?
Luxury vinyl planking.
Oh, yeah. The vinyl planking. Yeah.
It's pretty similar to laminate. Right. But I've been hearing a lot of good stuff about that. So I might start using some of that, but I think tile is good. You know, if you can put tile in a kitchen and in a bathroom,
right?
You're set. You know, it's pretty robust. And I try not to do, I only do carpet in the bedrooms just because, I don't know, it's just got a nice feel to it. You know, having carpet in the bedroom, people like that. You know, you don't have cold feet walking on the floor and stuff, so. Other than that, yeah, I try to put in good flooring. That's probably the most tenant-proof stuff I could do.
Okay, all right. So I was gonna say, all right, since you're a buy and hold guy, it has its negatives and its positives. What would you say the biggest pros and cons of being a buy and hold? Like, all right, let's start with the pros. What's like the biggest advantages?
The pros are probably the loans you get. I don't think people talk about this enough. You can borrow 30-year loan for under 3%. I mean, and if you factor inflation into that, I mean, you know, debt's the best hedge against inflation. Yeah. So in 30 years, that $100,000, in 15 years even, that $100,000 you borrowed today is not nearly the same as it's going to be in 15 years.
At all,
you know, and
yeah,
I mean, it's basically free money. So that's probably the best benefit. I mean, I could probably go on all day about the benefits of it, but a con I would say is, like we talked about earlier, it takes a long time to see the light. It's a get rich slow, right? And the longer you hold it, the better it gets. But in the beginning, you're not making a lot of money. And if you're living off your cash flow, it's going to be tough. And again, I'm in class A areas. So I'm not buying for cash flow. I mean, I'm doing forced appreciation. Okay. Wow. If I were to buy a property in my market as is and rent it out, I could maybe get a couple $100 cash flow a month, but I want more than that just for the cushion, you know?
But you said class A area.
Yeah.
That means you're getting less cash flow, right?
Right. Right. Okay. Less cash flow, more appreciation.
Okay. So you want a little cash flow, but not much. You're banking on the appreciation of the property.
Well, since I'm doing so much work, I'm getting around 600 to 700 positive cash flow per property.
Wow, that's great.
But I'm putting a lot of work into the properties. You know, I'm doing, you know, lighting, plumbing, new paint, new floors, kitchen, bathroom, everything. It's like a brand new house. Okay. You know, so I'm kind of going all out on the rehabs, but I'm hoping that'll pay off in the long run.
Now, how do you go about the drywall? That's one of the things, it's the most tedious task. Like, I just got a whole house re-drywall, and it's like, it takes so long, you know. It's a tedious process. Do you put new drywall or you just paint it? Because the latest house I just did, the walls of concrete, and it was just rough. So I felt like I wanted to look real new. So I put brand new drywall in the whole house, which it's a lot.
Yeah, I'm going through that right now. It's difficult for sure. It's a lot of manual labor. And I think that was kind of when I decided maybe I should start hiring this stuff out, you know, because I could pay somebody not that much to do drywall in a house. You know, guys that do this for a living, they're professionals at it, and they could crank it out. I could be, you know, working all weekend on something and they could crank it out in a day. So I'm just trying to think of, you know, I want to keep moving towards the direction of hiring, outsourcing more of the work, like drywall, for example. Like maybe I'll start by kind of phasing some of the stuff out. Like drywall, it's not really expensive to hire it out. So maybe I'll do the electrical and the plumbing, because those are, like you said earlier, those are expensive trades. Those cost a lot of money.
Right.
So the more labor intensive stuff, maybe I'll start to hire that out. Like drywall. Yeah, it's too much, man. I don't know why I do it to myself.
I can't believe you do it. You know what I asked myself today? Because I'm getting to the point where I got a crew to work, because usually I'd be on site all the time. And now my guys, they'd be like, George, leave, go, you know, go do something. I'm like, I'm used to staying around here. So I asked myself today, would Brandon Turner do this? Because, you know, he's kind of like so far from his properties that he can't go put no nail in the wall. He can't, you know, take down blinds. So I asked myself that, because at some point I love finding deals. I'm the person, I want to every day wake up in the morning, let's go look at the new property, get in a contract, buy it. And then I'm like, all right, I don't want to worry about that property no more. I'm on to the next. That's my overall, like, that's my best skill, is finding deals, you know?
Yep. Do what you're good at, you know, and hire out the rest. But going back to what you said about Brandon, he hustled in the beginning. He did his own work. So there's a time and place for it. You know, it's not forever. There's a time and place to really buckle down and hustle. Cause how else are you going to get ahead?
Yeah. You know, you can't.
There's a time and place to really buckle down and hustle, but it can't be forever.
Right.
You know, eventually you got to step away.
All right. So we're going to switch it up a little bit off of real estate, but I want you to try to, whatever in your head, let's see if it can come out your mouth. All right. If God gave you a gift, a natural gift, and it was a secret, nobody else knew, what do you think your secret gift is? Like nobody, I mean, you're really naturally good at this, whether you practice it or not. Natural skill.
I would say communicating with people. I don't know. I feel like I can naturally have a conversation with anybody.
Dang.
Like you, I never met you before. This is the first time we ever talked. And it's so organic. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's you, maybe it's me.
Nah, you know what? That's a common answer on the podcast. A lot of times, like I have couples on here and the women be like, well, you know, Josh, he can just talk to anybody, you know?
Yeah.
And that's an important skill. I'm not going to say I can just randomly talk to everybody, but when I'm around like-minded people, but if we talk about like real estate or like sports or something, I can pretty much talk to anybody, but I'm kind of an introvert. I'm not just like, we had a random setting at some crazy event.
Yep.
I don't know if I can just say I talk to anybody, but that's a great skill.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So if you're naturally good at communication, what would you think your purpose is in this world before you die?
To help people. I know it sounds cliche, but I want to get people on board with what I'm doing so that they can set up their lifestyle, you know, for the best possible life that they can have. You know, mostly people that are close to me, you know, but you can only go so far. You know, I've realized that you can't push it on people. If they want to do it, they're gonna reach out and they're gonna try. You can't force people to do anything.
No, You're right. And you, how can I say that? Because you want them to, like, I got a brother, younger brother, and yep. he still works his job, and you got to work a job. But sometimes I feel like I'm pushing it on him.
Right.
And because it's not an easy lifestyle to be a full-time entrepreneur, business owner.
Right.
It, you know, it's not hard. So sometimes I feel like I could be wanting him to have the same life I have, but everybody don't want that.
That's right. You can only go so far. So it's more so if people reach out to me that are interested, I love to help.
Right.
You know, but I don't want to be pushing it on anybody because it's not for everybody. And that's fine. You know, if you don't want to do what we're doing, that's fine. You know, maybe you're just content just working a normal job and saving up for your retirement. You know, everyone's different.
Yeah. Is it anybody, like anybody in your life that you didn't get the chance to meet, or maybe they passed away when you was really young, but you hear great things about them and you wish you could like had more time to spend with them? Like, is it anybody you could think of, like you wish you could bring them back to life, or who you think?
My grandpa, for sure. So actually a funny story is, cause he was super handy, right? He did everything.
Wait, around that's your dad? Dad?
My mom's side.
Your mom's side. Okay. Go ahead.
Funny story though. I was born on his birthday. So we shared the same birthday and I was named after him. So
dang, yeah,
it's like meant to be.
Wait, and was he passed before you were born, or he passed when you were young? Which one?
Nope, he was still alive when I was born.
Oh, so you met him? Talked to him?
Yeah, I met him, but he passed away, 2010.
Okay.
So, but I had a good relationship with him. I was just still young at the time. You know, like I wish I could talk to him now and he could see what I'm doing. Like he would be all about it. You know.
Oh man, that's crazy. That's and I was thinking about it. I mean, I think it was on TV. I seen this question. That's why I wrote it down. But it was like if you could bring back somebody from 2020, like you know, from this past, because a lot of people passed, a lot of famous people passed this year. So I thought about that because my granddad, he passed like 4 days before I was born. And a lot of things I'm doing now, I'm hearing it from, you know, just people in the community that my granddad was that person. So it's like, dang, man, I wish I could. I feel like I was like God took him, then I came out, you know, with this information.
Right.
But that's crazy, yeah.
And he's still watching over you, too.
Yeah. It's like a lot of traits that people tell me about him. I'd be looking at my son because I got a 2-year-old, and I'd just be watching. Like, he walked with his hand in his pants and stuff. I'm like, why are you walking? You know what I mean? Like an old man. It's just little things. That's how you know. Like it's something bigger than us, because I never met him and I got so many traits like my granddad, you know what I mean? Like just from hearing what people tell me.
Yep.
And I'm like, that's why I think like that. Cause at my job, my 9-to-5, people would call me like, this one guy, he'd be like, George, you must have been like a blonde woman in your previous life. And he say that, and he say that because like I did not understand the 9-to-5 pay structure, how hard they had me working. I just couldn't put my hand around it. Like, and everybody was miserable. Like every morning at 8 o'clock, they had to stop, you know, 8 o'clock in, and they complaining. I'm like, hang on, man, this can't be like you complaining and I gotta do this for 30 years. Oh no, it don't make sense to me. That's what I was saying. So everybody looked at me like I had 4 heads. Like, George, you gotta work. You just had a child. You gotta work. And I just didn't get it, you know?
Yep. But it goes back to that hustling we were talking about earlier. You know, the typical person works 40 hours a week. So if you're not doing something on the side, how else are you going to get ahead? You know, you've got to really hustle hard to get ahead. It's not easy. Yeah.
No, it's not. And with social media now, a lot of people I follow, like I think Grant Cardone, you seen that show Undercover Billionaire?
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Oh man, he got a good podcast came out today, but he was just talking about how you know, they dropped him off in a random place and he got $100. And he was like, he wanted to work at 11 o'clock at night, and the show was like, hey, look, the cameraman's gotta go to sleep. You can't be working all day and all night. And he's like, hold on, this is me, you know. I'm hustling. I got $100, I gotta make it work. Yeah. And that's like we get to see behind the scenes now what people are really successful people are doing, what it take. Like, they get up 5 o'clock in the morning, working out, yep. running, exercising. Before like 9 o'clock, I bet most successful people do more, get more accomplished than yep. people do the whole day.
Yep. I think that's one of the main traits of being successful is how uncomfortable are you willing to get? How much can you tolerate? You know, can you really, like, nothing good really comes from the comfort zone. You know, you grow when you put yourself, kind of like what I was talking about earlier. I was so stressed out. I had no bathroom. I tore my whole bathroom apart. I was extremely uncomfortable. You know, how uncomfortable are you willing to get?
Yeah.
I notice that with every successful person is they go through something that just they can tolerate it for whatever reason, strong willpower or I don't know what it is, but.
And that's what Grant Cardone said too. He said, everybody is strong enough to get there. It's just, yep. you gotta, it's like a muscle. You gotta build it.
Right.
And then over time you become, you're not afraid to go talk to 1,000 people in the audience because at first you was, but if you keep doing it over and over, eventually you built this strong muscle to go out here and face it.
Yep.
Yeah. It's the one guy, I know you heard of 50 Cent the rapper, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so he got a book just came out. It came out on YouTube, actually.
Nice.
And one of the things, because people always say he's fearless and people are scared of him. And he said, honestly, he's actually scared of a lot of things, but the only difference is when he's scared, he go towards it.
Yeah.
Because he don't like being in fear for long periods of time.
That's right.
And I was like, dang, that is
I like crazy. That a lot.
Yeah.
Fear is, it's such a roadblock, right? It stops so many people. If you can get over that fear of anything.
Yeah. And it's just going through it. Like the one story he did tell was, you know, 50 Cent known for, he got shot, I guess, 9 times.
Yeah.
And he was like the most, like right now, like he going business meeting with people and stuff. And that doesn't fear him. He said when he got shot and he went to therapy, the therapist told him, you, in order for you to get back, you know, healthy, you're going to have to jog every day. So he was like, I got a jog. So now, not only got a jog, he has to go back to his grandmother's house where the people shot him at. And they want him to jog.
Wow.
So it was either, he said he could have moved to like across town and it would have seemed like he moved to Hawaii. That's like people didn't travel from town to town. So, or he could get a treadmill. Like run inside. And he was like, he got home and he was like, I gotta go jogging outside. Knowing the people who shot at him still wanted, he said they still want to kill him and they're still on the loose. So he like he woke up the next morning and he got his jogging suit on and he was finna go outside the door, but he seen a strange car. And a guy, he said a guy ain't look normal. He looked like he was trying to fit in with the neighborhood. So he didn't know at that time if his mom was playing a trick on him or that guy was really out there waiting on him.
Yep.
So he did it again the second day. The same guy sent out there. And he said, he called his friends over and he said, hey, I need you guys to run with me in the morning. You know? Yep. So the next morning comes up, nobody shows up except for one friend. And that's the fat guy. He was like, man, man. So he told his friend, he was like, you know what? I got a bike for you. You ride the bike. He was a boxer. So he wrapped his hand up with his boxing tape and put a gun inside of it. So he ran, he went outside and ran and he had his gun wrapped up.
Yep.
So he said he was scared, but he took the all the necessary actions in order to avoid danger. You know? So he still went and did it. So people like, he crazy, he's still out here, but he had a gun wrapped up, you know? So it, was
it
like,
doesn't matter. He still made it happen.
Yes.
Can you make it happen? That
That's
no matter what, it doesn't matter. There's always a solution to everything.
Yeah.
And that's what he talked about. Happen.
Yeah.
I and imagine like, how good he felt after that, too.
Yeah. He said he ran every morning.
Yeah.
That's why he say nowadays when he got shows on NBC, NBC, and all these people coming at him. It's not, that's not fear. Like, fear was when somebody's trying to take your life. Like, you know, you might cancel my show. He might get sued.
Yep.
You're still going to be alive at the end of the day, you know?
Yep.
So I was like, that was a whole nother level of fear. Like, I was like, I'd be scared to walk on stage and 100 people out there, you know?
Right.
Like, that's nothing, you know?
Well, like you said earlier, it's the muscle that he built up, right? So he's been lifting 100-pound weights. He went to going on the stage is like a 20-pound weight to him. It's nothing. You know, he doesn't even think twice about it. He just goes up, and that's it.
Yeah. So I just thought that was an awesome story because
yeah, like, that's really cool.
All right. So what is your why? You want to buy and hold. You're working your job. What's the end result? What's the end results for you?
I just want to have the choice to quit my job or to be flexible with my life. Not necessarily, I hate my job, I want to get out of it. I just want the choice. Okay, so if I wake up one day, I want to go travel for 3 months. I want to be able to have the option to do that, right? To live life on my terms. That's what I'm going towards.
Right. How did your boss feel about you investing in real estate, or do they even know about it?
Yeah, I have a really good relationship with my boss. Okay. So he knows that I invest. Whether you should tell your boss or not, I don't know. It might not be a good idea, but I have a really good relationship with my boss. So he's super cool. And I get my job done. You know, I'm not like, I try not to let the investing influence my day job. Now, once in a while it does. And I'll be honest about that, but very rarely. I try to balance both, which can be a struggle sometimes because when I get really busy at work and I got a lot of stuff going on with my investing, it can be pretty stressful sometimes.
Right. Dang. Yeah. So I was thinking, All right, would you do this right here? Say it was a hot deal came in the market, a house came in the market for $75,000 and you knew, you know, it was probably worth 140, 150. Would you risk, say you put in offers, would you risk just wired of $75,000 to that person, to that escrow, just wire the money. Don't bump the offer because you got 10 people want the deal. Just wire the money. Would you do something like that?
Or no, that's not my type of investing.
Okay, that's what I was
saying. I'm not at that point yet. Okay, right. If you ask me that 10 years in the future, I'm sure I would. I'm at a point right now still where a deal could make or break my future. You know, I only have four houses right now.
Right.
So I'm still ramping up, you know? So I'm buying good deals, but they need to be like safe. I'm not going to go gamble and, you know, hope that everything works out on the deal. And then I get myself into the situation that I can't get out of, you know, right. I'm not at that point yet, but in the future, once I have more money sitting aside or more cash flow coming in, then I can take risks like that.
Right. I got it. When it gets so competitive in the market, like say you're in California, San Francisco, I'm in a small town, Florida, but like Miami and stuff, it is so hard to get certain deals, like under $200,000. So I just be thinking, like, how can I get past all these people, vultures going after this house, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, some people do that. Like, I sold a house recently to a couple, and they didn't even come look at it. They bought it from Canada in Florida. And I think maybe it had something to do with their taxes and whatnot. You know, they had to get rid of the money. Yeah. But it just, I don't know. It's crazy. It's weird.
Well, the thing is, it's kind of different if you're flipping and you're doing buy and hold, right? If you're doing buy and hold, it's more forgiving. So the house I'm in right now, I went 10,000 above asking.
Wow.
But it was still, I knew because the second I saw the house, I knew it was listed under. So I came in really strong and I got it. And since I bought it 6 months ago, and it's appreciated about 25,000 without remodels.
Wow.
So you just
went in automatic 10,000 over?
Yep. Because I get the email alerts on my phone when properties come up. The second it came up, I called my agent. I was like, we got to go look at this house right now. And my agent is fantastic. Right. Like, so he's like, all right, you know, I'll rearrange things. And we came here right away. There's already two other people looking at it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and this is like top number two school district in the state. Wow. So I was like, okay. I knew it was going to appreciate, you know? Right. So as soon as I saw it, I was like, we're going to go in strong, because I know even it just goes to show that list price is irrelevant. You know, list price does not matter.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
No, man, it's so crazy, because I'm like you. I can look at a house, I'll be like, that's underlisted. Like, it was a house, like, all right, a lot of times, like, in the hood neighborhoods, some people are not in the hood, so they don't know how much that house is worth. So I guess this lady got a realtor, maybe. He might have been from an hour away, but he put that house up for sale for $140,000. And I was like, the house is 1,700 square feet, concrete block. That house is at least worth 170, 160, right? So we put an offer in $5,000 over, 145 instead of 140. I'm a realtor, so I was helping the client. I told him it's worth 145. I knew it. It was on my mail route. But we still ain't get the deal. He had listed the property so low that I think he had so many offers, you know?
Yep.
And it was like the realtor had no idea what the value. I guess he thought maybe because his neighborhood is the value is lower, but stuff is flying off the shelf right now. So you can't always assume that realtor who lists the house know what they're doing.
Yep. And one tip really quick too, actually what I ended up doing is if you're going to do that, I actually ended up offering 10,800 more, because the 10,000 above was a generic number. So I went that extra 800 just because I had a feeling that my competition would go 10,000 even. And that $800 spread out over 30 years, it doesn't matter. But that's what might have won me the offer.
Oh my gosh. That is – that. If you're buying a house in a competitive market, that is a great tip right there. That's like my broker. He's a smart guy.
Yeah.
And we had a property go up for sale for it was listed for $35,000 foreclosure.
Yep.
This is about 2 years ago. We had a lot of offers on it. So, like you said, the lady wanted to offer $45,000. He was like, always in your offer with a nine. So I told her to do $45,009. That's $9. And you know, this is like a program where the computer is picking the offers of foreclosure. So the bank is all computerized. So your offer could be $45,000 cash. Yep. Mine's $45,009 finance. The computer took the higher offer.
There you go.
$9. Yes. So it's always like, that was so smart. Ending with an 800. That's awkward number. But if somebody offered 10,000 over, you got it.
Yep. Or 10,500. You know, I just said 800. Let's go with it.
Look, it should be $10,809. See?
There you go. Always at a nine.
Yes, always. He said my brokers are always in with nine, because foreclosures, a lot of times the broker who listed it, they don't make the decision. It's all computer generalized. So you never know, you know?
That's interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know that, but we specialize in foreclosures through Fannie Mae. So like people put in offers, it's not like, you know, a seller just looking over there, looking at the offers and decide. No, it's all going in computer and a computer. Yep. I generate it.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So who is your biggest supporter right now in your real estate journey?
Jeez.
Nobody's helping you?
Not really, to be honest.
Wow.
I'm kind of doing most of the stuff by myself. For now.
So you don't have – yeah, I got what you're saying. So you don't have no mentor you call on when you run into an issue that maybe already did it before, or you just out here just.
Yeah, not really. I haven't met that person yet. The thing is, I don't know why. I kind of like when I started, I didn't really talk about investing or buying real estate. I felt like I was bragging or being conceited by talking about my properties, and I don't know why I just didn't talk about it or didn't really put myself out there until recently. And I realized the power of networking. And I think it's kind of hard to have a mentor without having a track record, right? Because everybody says they're going to get into investing and buy real estate, but until you have a couple deals under your belt, I can't take you seriously. And I wouldn't expect anybody to take me seriously if I told them I'm going to buy all these properties and do this and that rehab or whatnot. So I think you should probably try and get a track record first. I mean, you know, podcasts and books are my mentors. I learned so much from it. Just having a podcast on in the background or reading a few books on it, you know, that's all I really needed to know.
Yeah.
And I'm always learning too. I'm always learning. Real estate, every day I'm learning something new. It's just never ending.
Right. That's why I said I listen to the Bigger Pocket podcast. I listen to every episode, like you said, before the show. And most of the time, I don't learn anything new, but I learned one thing that that person did that I didn't know. And it was like, I listened to the whole hour just to get that one, you know, piece of notch.
Yep. And just hearing people constantly hearing it in your head, like, this works. You know, if you don't hang out with people that don't invest, you're going to be second guessing yourself. Like, maybe I should give up. Do I really want to do this? But when you're in tune with podcasting or books, you're constantly filling your head with positive information towards the subject. So you're just constantly being reassured, okay, this works. It's going to work. Just keep moving forward and you're going to be good.
Right. Dang. I told you I did 5 years in prison, right?
No.
No. I was in the mail truck. Look, but no, what I know people who've been to prison, like, you're an idiot. That, you can't compare that to that. But no, this is what I'm saying. I was, like you said, I was just, my friends were them people in my headphones. So yes. Brandon Turner, Gary Vee, Grant Cardone, all these people were my friends. And I didn't really talk to nobody about real estate. But when I did talk to my coworkers, when I got back, they all called me crazy. Like, dude, people with tenants going to tear up your house. You'll be fixing this and that. That's a waste of money. So you really have to block out the people who are not really into it.
Yep. And the thing is, I try not to convince people that what I'm doing is good. Like you said, I always hear that. Oh, are you going to take phone calls at midnight to fix a toilet? Like, you always hear that. Like, you're focused on a phone call about a toilet. I'm focused. I got the vision for the future, man. I'm not worried about that at all. But the fact that you're focused on that, you're blocking your mindset from expanding.
Yeah. So that's what happened when people, if it, like, I even learned that I couldn't, because even I can't read and comprehend like the normal person. But if I listen to, like, I learned by listening. So that's what happened. And when I got in that mail truck, started listening to, when podcasts, I discovered podcasts, I started learning. I like woke up. So I think, like, even for the world, like, students in school, it's mandatory that you read this, take this homework, and, you know, you get a grade back 2 weeks later, and they're like, it's wrong. Well, you 2 weeks, I forgot all about that test. Like, come on, man. Let's correct it now. You know, that's why, like, I think the school is good. Like you say, school is good. People need to go to college. But people have to know how yourself learn. If you learn by reading or watching or listening, how do you retain the most information? I don't even think people even thinking about that, you know?
Yep. Everybody's different.
Yeah. So, but school is mandatory that you read and learn. So that's why I think you have to, even as a child, you need to pay attention to figure out, you know, which way you learn best when you're growing up. All right. So this is the final round of New American Dream questions. They're just first thought to come to your head. If you could spend a day with any mentor in the world, who would it be?
I'd say Elon Musk. And reason I say that is because I can kind of relate to him from an engineering standpoint and from an entrepreneur standpoint. Like, whether you like him or not, what he has accomplished is incredible. The fact just, it's insane what he's accomplished. So I would say him. Like, it's so interesting to me. It would be so cool to see a day in his life.
Oh, man. That would be, I would pay to come with you. That got it, because the one thing I did remember about, I mean, I love Elon Musk too. The one thing I remember about him was they were like, he scheduled his days in like minute, like 3 minutes here, a minute here. You know, like most people put like every hour. He got like 9 minutes. Like, I'm like, what?
He is crazy.
Yeah. I don't think you could have a family and live like that. I don't know.
No, I don't think so. But, yeah. You know, if you love what you do and you're passionate, you know, he probably loves it.
Nah, yeah, I love real estate. I tell my wife all the time, like, yeah. I have to make myself, like, even after this podcast, you know, I love the podcast stuff. I do my YouTubing. I love everything I do. So I have to make myself, you know, spend time with my family. Like you can't just do this. Because I don't think this is work. It's like, it's just really living life.
100%.
Yeah. Biggest book to change your life, or best book to change your life, or mindset?
How to Win Friends and Influence People. I'm rereading it right now, actually. It's just, it's timeless principles. You know? Don't criticize people. Listen. You know, that stuff's going to be valid forever.
Yeah.
You know, I really like that one.
Yeah. Now that you said it, I got to get it on. I probably got it on YouTube some. See, yeah. And that's the thing, too. I was buying all these books, reading them. Yep. And I can read, but when I listen to them, it's like, I don't know. I get another level of it. So
really?
I don't know. I'm a listener.
See, I haven't got into the audiobook thing yet. I need to get on board with it. But for me, I don't know. There's something about – it's just relaxing to me. Sit down and read a book. I don't know.
Yeah. I you see all the books. I read them. Yeah. But I learn it better when the audio for some reason. Like the 50 Cent, I think that book – I mean, he was reading it in his voice. So it's like real. Like even that other book I listened to – what is that book called? It's an old book. I know you read it. With the gold, you know what I'm talking about? It's like back in the time with the gold. Oh, man. I forgot. Where they trade gold.
Are you talking about Richest Man in Babylon?
Yeah, that book. See, I can't, the way the words in that book, I have to listen to it. But it's like one of my favorite books, you know?
Yeah.
Richest Man in Babylon. Yeah.
I love it.
All right. What are your hobbies outside of work in real estate?
I'm a poker player. I like to play poker. Snowboarding.
Online?
No. I schedule home tournaments. So I have all my buddies come over. You know, we'll play $20 buy-in. It's kind of an excuse to get everyone together too, you know?
Yeah.
And actually, during COVID, we were playing online for a while. We just started back up in person recently. So that was kind of interesting.
And you said you go snowboarding.
Snowboarding, surfing, wakeboarding, anything like that. I've been doing that stuff since I was a young kid. So it's like, just comes natural to me now.
Yeah. Oh, man. Forever, if you could live anywhere you want forever, or maybe just live wherever you want, what state would you live in or what place?
Hawaii, man.
Hawaii.
I was there for 2 weeks every day. 80 degrees, maybe a couple minutes of rain each day, but like here in Michigan in the summertime, when it gets hot, it gets humid. Like it's uncomfortable in Florida too. It's like it's uncomfortably hot, but in Hawaii, it's like it's 80 degrees, but you're comfortable. Like it feels good. I don't know what it is, but and the surf, it's so easy to surf there too. Like the waves are perfect.
Did you go there in the summertime? And see, I went into kind of. Go ahead.
And it was still, it was nice. It was like 80 degrees every day and comfortable.
Yeah. I thought I went the perfect time. I went for my honeymoon, I think. And it was like when did I get married? September. Yeah. It was in September. But it was just like you said, like it was after getting cool at night. It was like the perfect weather. I couldn't explain it. I was trying to explain it to people, but it's unexplainable. Like the whole vibe there. I was in Maui. But the vibe in Hawaii is like the traffic. I think the fastest speed sign was like 45 miles per hour. Like, it's a whole different energy. Yeah. Dang, I got to take my parents there.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. The old version of the New American Dream is you will, you know, stay at your job, your current job for 30 years. And then once you retire, you'll start going to Hawaii and going to different places.
Yeah,
that's the old American dream. What is your version of the new American dream for you?
Having the freedom to live life on my own terms. you know, when I'm 65 or 70, I'm not going to be active like I am today. So if I want to go hike in a mountain, I'm not going to be able to do it the way I can do it right now.
Right.
So why wait?
Yeah. How many properties you want? Or do you have a number or how many properties? Which one is it?
Well, my goal, now I'm announcing it live, is to have 10 properties by 30. I'm 26 right now.
No, that's a solid goal. Yes.
That was a goal I set when I was 20 years old.
Yeah.
So I got six more to go.
Yeah, and it's going to get easier. You got six more in 3 years?
3.5 years.
Okay. In 3.5 years, we're going to come back on the show, and we're going to see yes. how many properties you got.
Yes.
All right. Let the people know where they can find you at. If they want to reach out, contact you, how can they get in touch?
Yep. Instagram is probably the best place. Jimmy_Gallat. So JMMY_GALAT.
Okay. And I'll put it in the show notes too. All right, cool. Man. Thanks for coming on. You was a real estate investor. You wasn't one of these fake guys.
Right. Appreciate it, George.
All right.